you're in Baltimore.
I walked by past them, and I heard my brother say, for part of that, this is ill. Then I turned to them, and they grabbed me around, my brother grabbed me around and introduced me to my father. I didn't know him.
How many years was it since you saw your father?
Since I was 3 years old.
So you're now 17?
By the time I got there, I was already 19, 18 going on 19.
So you hadn't seen your father for like 15 years?
Yeah, 15 years. 15, 16 years. My brother took me and my father, and they got on the streetcar. There wasn't too many people on the automobiles in those days. And we went on the streetcar through Pratt Street, and I said to my brother, is this America?
Now this is 1922.
21.
21.
I say to my brother, is this America? Because Bow said, was such a beautiful city. And he takes me through Pratt Street, to those little shacks. And I wanted to know if that was America. And he said, yeah, this is America. And we went to 1923 East Pratt Street. That's where my brother lived on the second floor. And I lived. And I was there, and my brother said, no shop. He won't let me go in the shop, because if I go in the shop, I'll never learn to talk or anything. I'll be with Jewish people talking Jewish all the time. I'll never get anywhere. He says, you got to go to work in the store or someplace. But nobody wanted me. I was a shtima. I was bad and dumb. I couldn't talk.
What month was this in 1921?
That was for what?
What month did you come into Baltimore?
I think the Vanowding was inaugurated in January. The Vanowding was inaugurated president.
In 1921.
And,
you know, that was the year I was born.
After 5, 6, before you was born.
Yeah,
he wasn't born yet.
Right.
He wasn't born yet.
Right.
After... I'm going to tell you about that, too.
Okay.
After 5 months, and there I'm sitting, and my brother, a working man, and what's going to go to?
Where was your father at
so
this time?
Joe Fishburne came to see me to ask regards from his people, Van and Malik. He says he was a paper hanger. He would take me to teach me to be a paper hanger. So the next day I went to learn to be a paper hanger. And they took me to Bombard and Patterson Park Avenue. They put on a table a bundle of paper, a bucket of paste, and a set of suitcases of tools. And I carried that from Bombard and Patterson Park Avenue to Lexington and I Street. When I put that down, they sent me walking back to take a 10-foot step ladder. I took that and I carried that down. And when I came, they gave me a scraper and showed me how to scrape the walls. And I done it with plenty of appetite. When I came home that evening, I had 2 blisters in both palms of my hands. The next day, they left me homework. They gave me 2 buckets of thin paste and told me to come out to Moreland Avenue, but I thought that they said Maryland Avenue. I didn't know the difference. So I got on the streetcar with the 2 buckets of paste, and I asked the conductor to let me off the Maryland Avenue. Such address. He let me off the Maryland Avenue. I go around looking for the address, and no such a number.
Right.
And I'm afraid to put down the 2 buckets of paste, somebody might steal them. So I carry them around in my hands, looking for the number. I couldn't find it. I had to take the streetcar and go back home. The next day, then that evening, they got a hold of me and they told me I had to go to Moreland Avenue. I went there. After I worked with them a couple of weeks, they paid me $5 for the first week. The second week I got already $10. So I went to become a boarder. I rented a room for $8 a month, and the woman would cook for me. And
where was the room?
Italian, for what was the room was in Eden Street. The people's name was Moshe Tabak.
Oh yeah,
his wife. Moshe Tabak and his wife and his father. I still see the children. They grab me and they kiss each other just like we were brothers. I moved to them 2 times. But
how many years were you a paper hanger?
Coming back to paper hanging. After I worked for them about 3-4 weeks, I thought I was a mechanic already. They told me they didn't have no more work for me. So my brother says, my boss, he's got an apartment, got empty. Can you do it? I say, sure. I go and I take the job. I went in there. I went first and got a paper. And I went in there and I scraped and fixed the rooms up. Got everything, the paper. I first thing I went up to bring up and then threw my fingers down on the floor. And it was around 12 o'clock. I'm staying there crying. My brother came in. He said, come on, we'll have lunch. What's the matter? Why are you crying? He said, I said, send me back. Send me back.
To a liquor.
He said, come on, we'll have lunch. We went in and I sat down to eat lunch with him. And he told me what trouble he had, what troubles he had when he came to America. He worked for a boss who paid him off his wages with pennies. And he had a sore finger, so he put salt, wetted the pennies and put salt on him. And he didn't trust him, so he went to count every penny, count that money. And when he almost got done counting the money, he came over and shook it all up, messed it all up.
Why did
after you start telling me all these stories, I went back to my work. And my boss happened to come in. He needed something borrowed from him. He says to me, what's the matter with you? I thought you know how to do it already. I say, I'm tired, it goes through my fingers. He said, go ahead, smear. I went to smear up. He said, go hang it up. I went to put it up. And I made the job. I worked 4 days on that job, and I made $30.
Oh, my.
Oh, I was on the top of the world already. And little by little, that's how I worked 8 years. I worked with this paper hanging.
Were you working the 8 years for yourself or for your boss?
I was working a little for somebody else, a little for myself. And I was doing all right to work for somebody else. After I worked myself in, I was getting $8 a day in those days.
Was
my salary. Until I belonged to a club, I was a member of the Modern Social and Pleasure Club, one of the big shops, every day to the barber shop. and my sister-in-law Bessie said to me, my editor told me, he said, was I not talking, what's going to be with you? Whatever you make, you spend, you got the safe, someday you want to settle. I say, all right, I'll bring some money to give it to your wife and let her save it for me. So every week I would give her a little of my money and she would save it for me. I think she saved up about $250-$300. My brother, in the meantime, quit his job and went in business with Chaim Gross Lab and Yankee Gross Lab, pens manufacturing. They were 3 tailors, but they were not 3 business people. They could make the pens.
Yeah, but they couldn't sell it.
They could cut it, they could sew it up, but they didn't know what to do after they made it. And they went broke. They gave away a lot of credit and they didn't pay them, and they went broke. Eric says to me, what are we going to do being we'll clean up and we ain't got nothing to buy food with. I say, I got some money, I gave Bassett to say, go get it. So he got it, he used it, and he bought a store for Max Baylor. on 23rd Street. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my paper and gig. In the meantime, I met a girl. And I liked her, and we were about to be engaged. So I went and told her, I said, Ezra, maybe you can give me the money. I want to buy a ring for my girl. He said, you come with me. We went to Shapira, who was a jeweler, and next to the street. And I bought a ring for $250, a diamond ring for $250. And I went and took it to my girl, and we were engaged, and we were knowing. Chaim Gross Blatt signed on it, and she a title was signed for my Tanoim, and also my Tzibah.
What's Tanoim?
Tanoim when you're engaged. It's Tanoim.
Well, what do you sign? You mean this
you
is
a... You make a paper. It tells you that you're going to marry and what responsibilities you will take on you and all that.
A contract.
A contract, right. And we were engaged, and then we got married, and my father-in-law, may he rest in peace, he was a poor man, he wouldn't be an helper, and he didn't have much, but he bought me a palace. I'll never forget that little palace he bought me for what.
What year, what month and year was that? What was the date of your wedding?
I'd have to look it up. I can.
You don't remember?
I don't remember the exact date, but I know Rabbi Rifkin married us.
Where were you married?
In Rabbi Rifkin's house. And then I went and bought the stuff, bought everything in, and we had a dinner over my father-in-law's house. We had a dinner, and the next day we went to Columbus, Ohio. Somebody was here from Columbus and said, if I was in Columbus, I would just shove money.
As a paper hanger?
No. I went to Columbus and bought a rod to settle fruit for mouse trials in a big glass wagon. Hmm. And that, I didn't know how to drive. I'd never drove before.
Was this an automobile truck or a horse?
No. The relatives have never recommended it. These guys made a lot of money. It was an automobile, a big glass wagon automobile. And I didn't know the streets and everything so good. I had suffering up there. And then in the meantime, my rival became pregnant. And she was so beautiful. She was the prettiest thing in the whole world. The whole family was pretty. The father and mother, the brothers and sisters. They were the most beautiful family. You remember that?
I remember that.
And after a couple of weeks, I took that truck and put it in the garage. And I'm not going anymore. Somebody came and gave me a little bit of money for it. And I sold it. And I went to work for a paper hanger.
In Columbus?
Well, I came to Columbus with $1,000. Well, I had saved up, and it was gone. And I saved up enough money to go back to Burma. I came back to Burma with $25. We had to rent rooms, buy furniture, and my wife had to give birth to Eunice, my daughter. And we struggled.
When did you move into Light Street?
We bought furniture in installment, paid it. And then I kept on working at paper hanging, but then we moved, we believed in East Burma, around East Burma. Then we moved to Parkwood Avenue. Our sister lived in Parkwood Avenue, my wife's sister, Bessa. We moved in Parkwood Avenue. In Parkwood Avenue, I used to go and help my brother put out circulars. My brother bought an automobile. I think that things were getting a little better there from business.
What was Harry doing now?
He was in the grocery business. He bought himself a Max Baylor.
Oh, right.
So So I say to my wife, I'm not paper no more. I'm going to open up a grocery store. So I went around looking for empty corner where to open a grocery store. All the good corners were taken away. Who didn't wait for me. I bought a store and I had to kill chickens and I didn't like it. So, and the guy didn't do no business. He was putting money in the register. I caught up with him, putting money in the register to show me that he's doing business. And he gave me back my deposit and I went away. So I went around looking for a store. No use looking for empty corners for a store. In the meantime, I wasn't working, wasn't making any money. Your mother had to go to the hospital to see me, to give birth to see me. So she asked us to come in. Would be help for your father. So we moved in. And at night, when the train would come by the house, and start shooting up the stuff and make noise, I would sit up in bed, sleeping. Yeah. And when the train would leave, I'd go back and make that again. Well, anyhow, your mother gave way to see me, and she came back home, and we wanted to get out. So I went to look for a store, and this man called me out and told me he's got a good store. And the man was to sell it, and it's a wonderful corner. I went up there to talk to the man. He wants $2,000. I got $500. My father-in-law, may rest in peace, get me $500 from his family. Air assigned for $500. Was $1,500 and $500 I can't get. I went to Samuel Fox, Waver Fox. I'm not talking about this Waver Fox.
Yeah, right.
The big one, the one from the Riverside business.
Not Schlenke.
What's the name?
Ernest Fox.
Mike Fox's father. Right. Or Ernest Fox's father. I went to him in the morning. He was eating breakfast. He says, Kubal Trankeman, I'll be with you in a minute. And he came in, but I told him, I want to buy that store. I can't buy it. I got $1,500 and he wants $2,000. The man's gone to California and he can't wait. He wants all the money. He says, he'll come with me. We're going to buy the store. And it's a nice store. I'd like for you to buy it.
So live. He knew the store?
It's a liable corner. Yeah, the store years back, right near there. It's a liable corner, good corner. Well, I went down with him and he talked to the man 5 minutes and we bought the store. Well, I bought the store, but give him the $1,500 and then I was worried that I wouldn't have enough for the settlement. But I stayed with him 2 weeks and there was enough profit to do the settlement and I stayed and I was making money there. That was the store and I worked. From 6 in the morning to 12 at night.
I know.
7 days.
Where was the store?
Fremont and Saratoga.
I remember.
Right. On the corner of Fremont and Saratoga. One cow used to go on Fremont Avenue, another cow on Saratoga Street. The people would come in from one door and I'd have the store ready for them. Pick it up and get out the other door and get the street car and go downtown. And I had my customers would come from all directions. I don't business up there. I used to buy 10,000 King Edwards in one time, cigars. 1,000 Pell Productos in one time. I was one of the biggest customers. The F.A. Davis, everybody knew me. The bookkeeper, he knew all about me. I went down to the telephone company and told them I wanted to put in a telephone booth in my store. It was much place. I told them I'll break out a window and put it in there. He said, no, they can't give you no telephone. So I got a company and I made a telephone booth. And they put me in a telephone. I've done so much business on the telephone that they came and put me in too. And he told me, he said, I used to stop in to talk to the manager from the telephone company. He liked to talk to me, and I liked to talk to him. He knew all my business. without me telling him. He knew everything about me. Well, I stayed there 2 years and 7 months, and I was tired of it. One day I went upstairs to change shoes, my feet were sweating, and I fell asleep with a cigarette, and I almost burned up. My mattress was on fire. My wife yelled for me to calm down, she got busy. She couldn't take care of it. I woke up, but it was on fire, my sleeve was already burning. And I had a sink in the same room, and I grabbed water and put out the fire. Well, everybody hollered. He had such a wonderful story, sold it. But they didn't stay there 7 days or 7 nights. From there I went to Washington. And I bought a store from a Meyer Miller, 4th and P Street, Northeast. It was a beautiful store. And I put in every cent that I made up there on Fremont Avenue, South August Street. And I had a good chance to get cleaned up. But the store, my customers were losing their jobs. The depression came on. My customers were losing their jobs. It was a terrible thing. And before that, when I sold Fremont and South August, I went for a vacation in New York to see those people that helped me in Russia. And with them I went to see the Little Rebbe.
Who had come to New York?
In New York. I went to New York to see the people. I wanted to see the people that helped me, that took me in, the woman that took me in.
The woman that took you in at Warsaw?
Yeah, so I couldn't find her, so I went to the Little Rebbe, and he gave me the address where they're located in New York, and I went to see him. I was glad to see him, and they were glad to see me. And then I went to Washington with a store, and the store had a good name. I was losing customers every day. They lost their jobs, not because of my... They lost their jobs.
Because of the depression.
The bonus marchers came. I was passing by Pennsylvania Avenue with their transfer tanks, and the bonus marchers would chase them out of Washington. MacArthur got orders for Movo to chase them out. And I was there, right there.
They were the veterans from World War One, weren't they? They were World War One veterans.
They were promised bonus. They wanted it. From Washington, a man came and offered me my money, and I was glad to get it and come back. I was on 11 months of there in Washington. And I came to Bowman, I went to the wholesale Canada tobacco business, and that was the NRA, the Eagle, and they couldn't get connections over. They wouldn't let new people in the new business. They used to follow me like I was stealing something. And I was determined and stubborn to go into that business. My brother-in-law, he was a druggist, a pharmacist, and he was supposed to go in with me.
Karasik?
Yeah, Willie Karasik. And that was my wife's name, my first wife. So we went as far as Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, made connections with our wholesale grocer. But that guy knew that we can't get connections over, and he was taking the profit before we got it. He overcharged us, so we couldn't save that business. And my brother-in-law says to me, "You work no peanuts, I promise you, not used to working on 2 cents business profit." So he left me. My wife had two little children then. Evelyn was born. Two little children, she couldn't help me. I can't be inside and outside. So I called F.A. Davis and told him, "I want to get out of it." So he said, "Bring it in, we'll give you dollar for dollar." So I took my car and packed it up 3-4 times and carried it to F.A. Davis. And I kept the cigarettes. And shooting the cigarettes, I dreamt. And I made up all my losses from that business. And I went down to Butter Stone's South Bowman.
Yeah, I remember that.
There I was a member of every family. I loved them and they loved me. When they got locked up, I was the bailer. When they had a funeral, I had to go to the funeral. When they had a father, I had to go to the father. When somebody was broke, I'd run a bingo and make some money and pay the gas and electric bills. When they owed me a bill and their children needed milk and they didn't have the money, I still gave them milk.
Now, where was the store located?
When I came to Jackson and Bonner Street, there were cobblestones. I made a petition, and I had hundreds of signers on that petition and took it to Mayor Jackson. I want that street paved. And they came here and told me they're going to make it with bricks, BWA. They're going to make it with a brick street. And I said, no, I'm on asphalt. But finally I gave in and made a brick street. It's still there. Well, I was there 4.5 years. I had it so good. And I called my brother one day and I told him I'm going to sell my store. He says, I buy it. Yeah. I'm a Jesus. I told him, it's mine. I sold the store.
And he put Morris in it.
Yeah, even Morris. Both made a living there. It was a wonderful store.
Why did you sell it?
I had a boy that worked for me. A man, he was a married man then. He worked for me in Jackson Street. His name was Morris Shackett. He may rest in peace, he died since. He talked me in to go with him to buy a kosher butcher shop. Mm. So we bought Strongwater on Lumber Street. And I didn't like that business when I, after I got into it, I found out what it was. Didn't like it. They were selling any kind of meat for kosher meat, and I didn't have to do it. I could sell gentle people, meat without selling my soul. But I had to stick out until the people came from their vacation. They told me they want to buy it back. I gave it to them gladly. In the meantime, I had my partner go and open a store on Anderson and Freeman Avenue. And when I got rid of Lumber Street, I took him in. I gave him a little money. I gave the butcher a little money that worked for me. He went in business, and I took over that store. And I stayed there a good while until Billy Kaplan came along. And Joe Berman signed for him. He didn't have a nickel. Joe Berman signed for him for the money, and I sold him the store. And Billy Kaplan stayed there and made a success. I stayed around a month around Billy Kaplan to try to teach him. I used to go bring him in meat from the slaughterhouses, you know. And he made a good success. From there I went in Butterstone, Lombard and Cullen Street. And there I spent 23 years on the corner of Lombard and Cullen Street. People said that Peter Mac Sager, he bought a store from two college men. He's going to go broke. How can he take a store over from two college men? I took over the store. I married 3 children out of that store. I helped them buy homes. And I came out all right. I'm retired now. It'll be 17 years that I'm retired from that store.
Didn't you have a liquor store somewhere?
I bought the store from Mrs. Falk, and I happened to have 2 of her grandchildren in my family. Mm-hmm. One of them is my son-in-law, and one is my granddaughter's husband. Mm. Paul Falk is my granddaughter's husband, and Richard Falk is my daughter's husband.
Are they brothers?
No, they're cousins. One is Morris's son, and the other one is, gosh, I remember so many things. One of the other sons. I don't know, name, I can't think of it now.
Let's talk, we got plenty of time. Yeah.
Now, my lowest moved to Potomac. First you moved to New Washington, then from there she moved to Potomac, Maryland. And she invited us for Thanksgiving. We came there for Thanksgiving. Well, I used to go there, I plant trees for them, I don't know, kind of things. I done the painting for them and they bought a house. In fact, I have a poem my daughter wrote, which I still have it, what I did for them. But then that's out of the question.
No, that's not out of the question.
The vendor for Thanksgiving.
Do you know the poem?
No, I got it home. We went there for Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving Day, Richard and my lovers, they went to a bar mitzvah party. And we remained with the children. My wife was doing some sewing for Boris, and she said to me, I don't feel good. And then she says, I don't feel good, I'm very sick. So I wanted to get the children, I didn't know where they went. I went around booking, searching, I find the invitation. And I called up the place, and they were shooting, that's where they were. And they came running quick, we took an ambulance, and we took her to hospital, but in Washington. I'm lost with babies now.
Sorry.
And we took her to hospital, and she lasted 3 days, and she died on me.
What was her problem?
That was, she got out of there. They put a pacemaker, they tried to save her. Once before she got sick of me when I was on vacation and the mountains. And I had to lay around there a week, but she was in the hospital up there. And I was left without her, and I didn't like it. After a year, I married Blanche Houston, was her name. Now she's Blanche Weigel. And we've been married 4 years now. I am open to live long enough to reach the fifth generation that my great-granddaughter, Vicky, get married and have another baby. Then I'll have my few generations.
Well, the way you're going, you probably will.
That's part of my life. I didn't describe the First World War, but the Kazakhs came and the trouble we had with them, the trouble we had with the Nikon Kolchak, and they went around the fence, the written on them, killed the Jews and saved Russia.
Well, let's talk about that. Do you feel that you can talk about that?
Well, I don't know if I can remember a lot more, but I already said about that. The Russian Revolution and all that.
Well, you just talked about it a little bit.
I lived through an Easter of life. The life Easter I lived through. The First World War, Second World War, the radio, the airplanes, the television, stereo, reaching to the moon. Mm-hmm. By the way, my son-in-law Richard worked 4 years on the thing that went to the moon. Mm. He worked for Mountain Marietta.
Talk about some of your personal life experiences. Outside of what you've done was describe primarily your business life. How about, some of the things that you felt?
Oh, I was engaged in everything. Everything I was engaged on. The first thing was a club. I was a big club member. Then Heide Seidman, may she rest in peace, Heide Seidman, she called me Master in Lumber Street, and she said, Max, go to do something for our people in the league. From that, we organized a legal parade, which we used to get her mother, or at one of them once a year, and get her ads, and sell tickets, and make money, and send to the poor up there in the town. We had a Gmiras Chasunim Kasa up there in the Rik, which I appointed my stepbrother to be one of them, to oversee us over it.
What does that mean?
We had $1,000 free loan office up there, that if somebody comes and lends money, you know they can't pay you back, to lend them again. And we would repay it. We used to send the rabbi, the little rabbi, money. That was before Hitler. And we sent money for Muschitten, for Matzen. And we sent money for those who stretch out their hands and ask for money.
In Olik.
In Olik. Well, then came along the Second World War. Our Mags got busy again. I became a member of the Naval League.
I remember so, that.
And I'd go up there and cook, and we entered the Italian Garden. I was one of the members. I was the one, but I was a member. There was some people, outstanding people in Baltimore, in this little boy in Goebbels, doctor, was a big doctor. They dramatized his life when he died. It's funny, I can't recall names when I need them. After a while, I'll get them when I need them. And such people like Martin Dorman, people like that, they were members of those that rented Italian gardens, and we entertained the sailors. We cooked for them, we fed them. When they were off duty, they'd come to Naval League. And we would have even shows for them, and dancers and all kind of things. That was the Naval League. I read in the paper that they would close the furnaces, and I kind of locked a scrap iron, so they won't be able to have ammunition for our soldiers. So I went out to collect the scrap. Well, I would let out the word that I want to collect scrap. I was promised drugs, and people would come and help me. Nobody showed up. One fellow who saved me is a breadman in my store. He came around, his name was Eric. He came, and there was no truck, nobody brought a truck. Well, I went down, and I rented the truck from the Hitzel Rental Company, Hitzel Rental Company, and we went around and we collected the truckload metal, and we took it to the Fort Meade. We dumped it up there. The next Sunday, while my store was closed, we went again. And every Sunday, I'd go out with Eric, and we would collect scrap. Then, when I started collecting it, the police told me you can't do it on Sunday. It's against the blue law. So somehow or another, the Sun papers got a hold of it, and they came and they got us the story of it. They added the papers, and the next day the police came to my store and they asked me if I'm trying to show off or I really mean it. And they saluted me. And then I was called from the radio station, from the movers, on Old Avenue, the movie place, and they wanted me to go on the Fox News as a patriot. But I didn't attend for that. I've done it for the purpose of collecting the scrap. And we had a big scrap collection, and I was in the midst of it. And I remember one man who was the caretaker of the synagogue. He brought from Europe copper pens. They were priceless. And he gave them to me to give it away in the scrap. And I took it and I busted it on the curb in order somebody shouldn't steal it. I was aware of that. And we collected hundreds and thousands of tons of scrap. The mayor got jealous, Mayor Jackson. So he ordered everybody to put the scrap out. But wasn't too many of them going out to collect it. They had to get the soldiers from Fort Meade to come out and help collect them. But I was there on the job. I had a flag raising. I had 10,000 people at the corner of Lombard and Gunn Street in my store. I had a stage built. I had the pre-show from the Union Square Church up there on the stage. I had a master ceremonies. We had 10 bands of music with the help of Albert Lemkin, who was a well-known man through Baltimore. We organized that. I had a flag stretched from my chimney, from my store, across the East Chimney, and we honored the mothers of the boys in the service.
What did you do for the people in Alik who were trying to run away from Hitler in World War II?
Well, we didn't know anything of it. We didn't know. We didn't know. When we find out that some of them are in Israel, Benny Gaman and I, we went out and one day we collected $1,000 and we sent it to him. When I was in Israel, I gave him some money for the book that they wrote. They wrote a book about the week. I have one home. I had two. I loaned one to my rabbi and he got lost per track of it and can't find it. But one of them, in that book is a write-up about my uncle, who was called Idol Michilko. He was Reuven Michilik against the little town where people used to go for vacation. And he was Reuven up there, and then when the war came, they were fighting around there, and they chased them from there, and they came to a league, and the league of rabbis ran away with their hostages. So he became rabbi of the league, and he was rabbi of the league for good. He didn't need no money. All he had to do is learn and tell people from right to wrong.
Max, what do you think, when you think back on your whole life, what do you think is, what gave you the most pleasure? What did you do that made you the happiest?
Well, I know everything I did. I'm satisfied with my life, regardless of whatever comes. I'm a person that's satisfied. When you're satisfied, you reach and everything else.
But do you remember any one thing that, or any...
I love my family, I love my children, I love Bill and my first wife, and I'm I like this one too. You can't say the same as the other one, because the other one, we grew up together, we had children together, but I'm just, I try to treat her the best of my knowledge, and I like her. I like her very much.
If there was something in your life that you could do different, what would it be?
I don't know what else I could do. I think my life was fulfilled. If I could help somebody, I was more than glad to do it. My happiness was when I helped somebody. I was instrumental to get somebody a scholarship. I don't want to mention the name exactly. But it's a well-to-do, well-known lawyer here in Baltimore. I got him a four-year scholarship to go to college. I took a man through my battle with politics. I took a man that was locked up in jail all the time, and he was told to walk around the place as long as he shows up. That would give me a lot of pleasure that I could do it, and a lot of other things that I've done, little things.
right now, what are the things that you're doing now in your life that make you happy?
Right now, it's me and my children. When I go, my children, when they graduate or something like that, and I go and I see it, and I said, mach es for me.
When, you know, in future generations, you have Kinahari, you have four...
I've been to Israel with my first wife, I've been to Israel with my second wife. I've enjoyed every bit of it. I loved every inch of it. Because wherever I went, the Chumash went with me.
You want your children and great-grandchildren to remember you?
Well, I want my children, my grandchildren, great-grandchildren, I want them to have a name like I have for Baltimore, because I've spent most of my life here. I want them to be in the right steps, so people would say, here goes Max's granddaughter, such a fine woman, or such a fine man, Max's father. That's my hope.